In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you. Everyone wants to know, when did they live? Where did they walk? Are they under my feet right now? Where did they come from? And more importantly, where did they go? These giant lizards that roam the earth, dinosaurs everywhere. That's what we're told. And we're told that with a catastrophic strike of a meteor, they all died. Is that true? And how do we explain dinosaurs from a biblical perspective? Ken Ham is president, CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum. He's host of a daily radio program called Answers with Ken Ham, and he's author of the new book, Dinosaurs for Kids. Ken, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Do Christians who believe in a biblical account of the creation, do they deny that dinosaurs existed?
You know what? There have been a minority of Christians who, because they didn't know what to do with dinosaurs, some people have said that they didn't exist and so on. But really, the majority of Christians, logically thinking Christians, do not deny dinosaurs existed, simply because we find their bones, we know these fossils exist, so we know these creatures really did roam the earth in the past, as far as we can understand things. We have to keep in mind that because of the influence of evolution and millions of years, many Christians think that there's some great big mystery about dinosaurs, but there's really no mystery. They're just bones of land animals, just like we find bones of other land animals. This just happened to be a specific group of land animals that, as far as we know, none of them exist on Earth alive right now.
What is the biggest myth put forth by the evolution proponents with regard to dinosaurs?
Well, you know, from a Christian perspective, the biggest myth is that they died out long before man, that they died out 65 million years ago, and they lived from 200 million years ago to 65 million years ago, then died out, and because of that, you know, no human ever lived with dinosaurs. And they mock at the idea that Christians would have that dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time. And I would call that the greatest myth, or that's our age of fiction that we live in right now. Now, for those who believe the biblical account, God created land animals on day six, and so he created dinosaurs on day six, because dinosaurs are land animals, and Adam and Eve were created on day six. So dinosaurs have lived with man ever since the beginning of the creation, basically.
With regard to the fossil record, Ken, we're given the impression sometimes by the evolutionary account that, all you really need to do is put a spade in the ground just about any place on the earth, and if you dig long enough, you're going to find dinosaur bones. Is this true? In the fossil record, are dinosaur bones most of what we find?
Well, now, that's a good question, because, you know, when people say to me, look, if Noah's flood really happened, where are all the human fossils and so on? People really have the wrong idea about the fossil record. We think the fossil record consists mainly of dinosaurs or, you know, some of these other creatures that sometimes we're familiar with that the secularists talk about and so on. But in actual fact, you know, one of the scientists that I know, creation scientists, in the research that he has done, said that basically when it comes down to it, 95% of all the fossils, 95% are of marine snails and corals. And of the other 5%, 80 to 90% are plants and insects. It really comes down to something like 0.25% of the fossil record. That's pretty small. Yeah, it's less than 1% are actual vertebrate fossils. And by vertebrate, we're talking about, you know, all your land animals, your reptiles, your mammals that lived on the land, your amphibians that were vertebrates. We're talking about lots and lots and lots of creatures here. The thing is, most of the fossil record are marine snails, corals, plants, and insects. Just a fraction are vertebrates. So one of the things that we say is that the fossil record is actually vertebrate poor. And I think that's important for us to understand. We get the idea that that's all you find, mainly dinosaur bones and so on, but that's such a minute fraction of the fossil record, which actually helps us understand, too, why it would be very rare to even find fossils of humans or, you know, people that lived before the flood. It would be exceptional if we did because, you know, there's most of the fossil record we haven't dug up anyway. We've only sampled certain bits of it, and most of it are marine snails, corals, plants, and insects. And God created a lot more animals than he did humans, only two humans to start with. So actually, you wouldn't even expect to find any, if any, human fossils at all from the flood. And I would say to you that's one of the reasons why we don't.
Do you contend that among taking seriously the biblical account of creation and then the subsequent account of a universal flood, as the Bible tells it, do you contend that among the animals that God brought to Noah to be on the ark with him, to weather the flood and to survive afterwards, among them were dinosaurs?
Well, the Bible says two of every kind of land-dwelling, air-breathing animal, and it lists the kinds there in Genesis chapter 6 that went on board Noah's ark. Two of every kind, seven of some, but two of every. And it's the same list that you find in Genesis 1, where God created the land animals. And so dinosaurs were a part of that particular list of land animals. And so, because they were land animals that God created, so dinosaurs must have been on the ark. I think one of the problems people have here, you know, when they start thinking about dinosaurs on the ark, it's that we tend to think that all dinosaurs were great big monsters. But dinosaurs were not all great big monsters at all. You see, the average size of a dinosaur is only the size of a sheep. Many dinosaurs were even as small as chickens. Some are even smaller than that. Again, when you look at a lot of the secular books on dinosaurs, they give the impression that they're all great big monsters because we only ever see the big sauropods and the big T-Rexes. No, they might throw in some of the others, the raptors and so on. But I think because of the monster appeal and because the word dinosaur itself, which was invented in 1841 by a British anatomist, Sir Richard Owen, from two Greek words, dinosauria, which means terrible lizard, because he had found the bones of Iguanodon and Megalosaurus and so on, then people think that because of that, that all dinosaurs were great big monsters. But that's just not true at all. And we've got to get rid of that idea that dinosaurs were great big monsters. They would never fit on the ark. The average size from all the skeletons we find, and really from the number of really complete skeletons, I think there's only a couple of thousand complete skeletons that we really find on Earth. But from the number, we know the average size was just the size of a sheep. Now, some did grow large, particularly as sauropods. Your sauropods could grow to, you know, 100 ton, 80, 90 ton. You think of the great Seismosaurus and some of those others, the Apatosaurus and so on. But dinosaurs hatched out of eggs, and their eggs weren't that much bigger than the size of a football. It's like a crocodile. You know, you can hold a baby crocodile in your hand that's just hatched out of an egg. I've done that, actually, or you can hold a crocodile egg in your hand, but you wouldn't hold a, you know, 20-year-old crocodile in your hand or a 20-foot-long crocodile in your hand. You wouldn't have a hand left at the end. Well, it's like with dinosaurs, you know, you could have a fully mature adult that was very, very large for the sauropods. But the sauropod that God took on the ark could have been a young adult that hadn't reached that extreme size. And then, you know, for most of the other dinosaurs, they didn't really grow massively. I mean, your T-Rex might look like a big dinosaur, but it's not much bigger than a big elephant if you think about it. And again, I believe God would have chosen young adults ready for the new world. But most dinosaurs weren't that big anyway. There was plenty of room on Noah's ark.
All right, so maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe the problem is what we think of. That picture that pops into our minds when we hear the word dinosaur. I know what picture pops into my mind. T-Rex, big teeth, big legs running all over the place, killing things. Or the Brontosaurus, this gigantic, terrible lizard. Maybe we need to re-educate ourselves and young people about what the word dinosaur really, truly means. We're talking with Ken Ham, president and CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum, host of a daily radio program called Answers with Ken Ham, and author of a new book, Dinosaurs for Kids. Stay tuned. Later in the interview, we're going to give away two copies of this book, Dinosaurs for Kids, by Ken Ham. We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muscoda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muscoda, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The consequences of technology.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
While IVF technology has given thousands of couples hope in the midst of infertility, the related moral questions continue to mount. As Albert Moeller points out in his article, The Disposition Decision, we have created a moral context of quicksand that is the inevitable consequence of producing far greater numbers of embryos than are ever intended to be transferred to a mother's womb. What's the future of these tiny human beings? And who decides what will happen to them? Only a fraction of them will be given a chance at life. Tune in next time for more.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Thursday afternoon, November the 5th, I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Ken Ham about dinosaurs. Maybe that's part of the problem, Ken. Maybe part of the problem is the word itself, how we define it, because most people think of the big, terrible lizard roaming the earth and wreaking havoc or chewing on the tops of trees. And maybe we need to get a finer, a better definition of the word dinosaur. What do you think?
Well, I think that is a problem. People have the impression, you know, because they know that they've seen pictures of T-Rexes and pictures of isauropods, and the word itself means terrible lizard. In fact, there's, you know, often some of the titles for the dinosaurs call them terrible lizards because that's really what the word means, the word dinosauria that came from those two Greek words meaning terrible lizard. So we've just got this idea. It's just an impression we've got out there, and it's one of those urban legends, if you like, where we got this idea all dinosaurs were great big monsters. And so how do we get rid of people's impression that is so? Well, it's going to take some work. You know, when you've got movies out like Jurassic Park and The Lost World and so on, and you often see it's the big dinosaurs, and you see the raptors too, but it's the big ones that leave that lasting impression on us. But we get the idea that's what all dinosaurs were like. And so one of the things, you know, we do as a ministry is in our talks, in our DVDs, and in the books we publish, is to really help people get the right perspective on dinosaurs. They're not all great big monsters. You know, I know kids love this monster appeal, and we need to start de-secularizing our thinking and start to think in things in correct terms. And that's part of the problem with the whole issue of creation, evolution, talking about dinosaurs, the fossil record. People just have the wrong impressions. As we said earlier, they've got the wrong impression that most of our fossil record are of all these vertebrates, dinosaurs, and so on, when that's not true. Most of your fossil record are basically marine creatures, snails and corals, and then plants and insects. And so, you know, they've got the wrong idea about the fossil record. They've got the wrong idea about dinosaurs. They think they're all great big monsters. They weren't. Most of them were quite small. So we've got to, you know, rethink things about that. And that's true of a lot of these issues. One of the reasons that a lot of people misunderstand, or they don't know how to answer the questions, or they teach their children wrong things, they haven't really gone and studied it, and they just accept these impressions they're given. And we certainly need to change people's thinking out there, that's for sure.
Okay, what do you contend, and how do you reconcile the fossil record with the account of the flood and the ultimate demise of most if not all of the dinosaurs by the time, you know, by the time we start keeping records of what we see and where they are and what kind of animals are in the world, we don't have a lot of descriptions of these big or small lizards.
Well, you know, here's what I would say. I think dinosaurs, I think there's a possibility that they're talked about and we have more descriptions of them and more information about them than many other animals that have lived on this planet. See, that's a surprising thing. That's a whole different way of looking at things. It's like in the Bible, people say, well, dinosaurs aren't mentioned in the Bible. Well, the word dinosaur is not because it wasn't invented until 1841. You know, the Bible was first translated in English basically in 1611 with the King James version and as a full Bible. But the word dinosaur wasn't invented until 1841. But, you know, we do have dragon legends all over the earth. And you know, for many people, they say, oh, dragon legends, these are stories about mythological animals and so on. Why are there dragon legends in many of our different cultures? When you look at some of the descriptions of these dragons, some of the carvings, they actually fit with how we would describe some of the dinosaurs from the bones we found. And could there be a connection there? Well, you know, if you think about it, we have flood legends all over the world. The American Indians, Fijians, Hawaiians, Australian Aborigines, the Eskimos, back to the Babylonians, have legends of a flood that sound like Genesis. So, you know, they have similar elements to the flood of Noah's day. And I believe that that is incredible evidence that the Bible's history is true. You see, since the Tower of Babel, when God gave different languages, you split up the human gene pool, forms different people groups. That account of the flood is handed down. It's changed. But the real record is right there in the Word of God. And it's remained unchanged. And so a lot of those flood legends, we would say, attest to the fact that God's word is true and this flood really occurred. It was a real flood. It was Noah's flood. Well, the reason that many of our dragon legends exist could be of the same sort of understanding. That is, they have a basis in truth, a basis in real creatures that they described as dragons. And I think that's a distinct possibility. In fact, you know, the other thing to remember is that it's not just the dinosaurs that have become extinct. You know, people often say to me, well, why did the dinosaurs become extinct? Well, what happened to the dinosaurs? Well, why is it the dinosaurs have died out and so on? Well, wait a minute. Well, what about the dodo bird? And what about all the other animals? Why do we have endangered species programs at our zoos and animal parks? You know, we live near the Cincinnati Zoo, and they have an endangered species program. We used to live in California, San Diego, where they have the leading zoo in the world, basically, and they have an endangered species program there and at the Wild Animal Park in California. Why do we have these endangered species programs? If you ask the scientists, they'll give you a list, and there are many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names of species of animals and plants, but particularly talking about animals here, that have become extinct. Lots of animals become extinct. Some are right on the verge of extinction right now, and they're trying to save these animals from extinction. And why do animals become extinct? Because, you know, of whether it's climate change or diseases or killing each other or man killing them or catastrophes or they kill each other or you know, whatever it happens to be. There's all sorts of reasons. Well, the same reasons apply to dinosaurs. And, you know, I think people are very familiar with them up until relatively recent times, because those dragon legends really only go back, you know, a few hundred years, and you've got people talking about dragon legends a lot. And I believe dinosaurs possibly that the word dragon was used for many of these creatures, and then they've died out, and as far as we know, none are living today. But lots of animals have died out. So it's really not that much of a mystery when you think about it. It's only a mystery if you think in terms of what we're told from the evolutionists, that dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, we don't know what happened to them, and so on. But see, what about all the other animals? Even from an evolutionist perspective, lots of other animals have also died out or become extinct from an evolutionist perspective. But we would say lots of animals have become extinct since the time of the flood, and that during the flood, you know, it could have been whole species of animals became extinct, but each kind was nonetheless saved on board Noah's Ark. And by the way, there wasn't just one kind of dinosaur. There's one kind of dog, and so you only need two dogs on Noah's Ark, but there's many different kinds of dinosaurs, those that are like the Triceratops dinosaur, those that are like your sauropods and your raptor kind and your T-Rex kind, but probably about 50 kinds of dinosaurs. And so that's another myth that people have. People have the idea that, oh, there are hundreds of kinds of dinosaurs, but that's not true. There might be over 600 names of dinosaurs, but probably less than 50 kinds. In fact, just recently, secular scientists announced to the world that they're realizing now they've misunderstood some of the bones of dinosaurs, and there's nowhere near as many species as they thought. Now, species is not a kind, by the way. You can have many species within a kind. But I think they knocked the number of species down by a third or something like that, which shows you that, you know, they've been misunderstanding the fossil record. But again, that's another one of those misconceptions. People think there were hundreds of kinds of dinosaurs, so why don't we see them today? There are probably less than 50 kinds.
Let's talk teeth, if we could. And, of course, the star, at least, you know, nowadays, the star of the dinosaur world is the T-Rex and those like it. It is accepted as axiomatic that this was originally a carnivore because the teeth all point toward the direction of a carnivorous activity on the part of the T-Rex. And yet, if what you are saying, Ken, is true, this was an animal created to kill. And of course, the biblical account of creation, I think you and I agree on this completely, is death is the result of Adam and Eve's fall into sin. And this animal before the fall would have no need nor inclination to kill and eat anything else. So how do we account for these apparently carnivorous teeth on this famous dinosaur?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Todd. We've been talking about misconceptions that people have today, and, you know, about the size of dinosaurs. We talked about that, the nature of the fossil record, what you find, and we talked about that, the number of kinds of dinosaurs, and we've talked about that. Well, here's another misconception, misunderstanding people have. You see, because we've gone through an education system, we've been indoctrinated this way. If you look at these teeth, these are the teeth of a carnivore, that's a meat eater. These teeth, these are the teeth of a herbivore, that's a plant eater. These are the teeth of an omnivore, they eat plants and animals. Oh, and by the way, here are all the exceptions. And by the way, think about that. And there are lots of exceptions. And see, I believe we're being taught the wrong way. We shouldn't be taught, you know, these are the teeth of a carnivore or these are the teeth of a herbivore. We should be being taught these are ripping teeth or these are gnawing teeth, these are grinding teeth. We should be equating teeth with their function, not teeth with food. And from a biblical perspective, we live in a fallen world. And because we live in a fallen world, things have changed. Genesis chapter 1, verse 30 tells us that originally, before sin, all the animals were vegetarian.
Well, let's take a break right here. And when we come back, we'll let Ken pick up where he left off on those teeth that appear to be carnivorous, but in fact, at least according to the biblical account, must have had some other function before all the killing and eating. Folks, we're giving away Ken Ham's new book, two copies of it, Dinosaurs for Kids, to callers 7 and 11. Call now during this break, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Callers 7 and 11 will receive Dinosaurs for Kids by our guest, Ken Ham. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. We're talking dinosaurs. Ken Ham is our guest. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss the war against fatherhood with Dr. Stephen Baskerville of Patrick Henry College. And when we come back, Ken Ham will be with us for the next 10 minutes of the program. We'll pick up on those teeth. We do need an explanation for those many sharp teeth if, in fact, T-Rex and other dinosaurs like it was actually not a carnivore. We'll find out what Ken has to say about that right after this. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. We're talking with Ken Ham, 10 more minutes with him. We're talking about dinosaurs. He's president and CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum, host of a daily radio program called Answers with Ken Ham, and author of the new book, Dinosaurs for Kids. Ken, before the break, you were trying to explain the teeth that we find on some of these apparently carnivorous dinosaurs, and you were saying that certainly before the fall, they were... They ate vegetation, not each other. Pick up where you left off, if you would.
Well, because we live in a fallen world, and we'll see a lion eating, an animal, and with those sharp teeth ripping it up, we think, oh, if they've got sharp teeth like that, they eat meat. Actually, when you look at the teeth of a lion, look at the teeth of bears, most bears, their structure of their teeth look very similar to that of lions, if you like. But, you know, there are some bears that are strictly vegetarian, and most bears do eat grass or berries or whatever. Even a grizzly, after he hibernates, will eat grass. Some of them are primarily vegetarian. And as I teach children, you know, just because an animal has sharp teeth, it doesn't mean it's a meat eater. All it means is it has sharp teeth. And see, in a world before sin, and this is something that's hard for us to envision because we live in a fallen world where the animals are fearful of us. God put the fear of man in the animals after the flood, for instance, and we live in a world where now there's death and bloodshed and animals attack each other and they attack people and people kill animals. But in a world before sin where everything was perfect, there was no death, all the animals were vegetarian, well, you'd look at an animal like a T-Rex with big sharp teeth and Adam wouldn't think of it as being savage and wouldn't be worried about it. And you need sharp teeth. You're going to chomp away on vegetables or fruits. You think of eating cantaloupe or watermelons or potatoes or chopping up branches. And in fact, even in today's world, for instance, if you were to look at the skull of the giant panda, and you look at its teeth, I mean, it looks like it's a savage animal, but it eats primarily bamboo. In Australia, we have a fruit bat that flies around Australia, and all it does is rip into fruit. But if you were just to see its jaw and its jaws and its teeth, you would think it's the most savage-looking animal you've ever seen and was a horrible meat eater, and yet it is basically it's a vegetarian. Do you know even in today's world there's a vulture, the palm nut vulture, that is a vegetarian? It cracks open palm nuts and eats palm oil. And see, there's all those sorts of exceptions that we have. And so what we need to understand is today we have animals that use their particular type of teeth for eating other animals because it's a fallen world. But originally, before sin, those same teeth basically were used for eating plants, eating vegetables, eating fruits. Now, it's possible that because God knew man was going to fall, he was going to sin, that God had the animals ready for such a fallen world. It's possible he changed things at the fall. But I personally think when it comes to even looking at teeth, there's so many exceptions in today's world. I think they had teeth like that as we see them today before the fall and just used them for different sorts of food than today.
I don't know how popular this theory is anymore, but it seems to kind of hold sway. At least it has for about the last 25 years among those who study dinosaurs. The evolutionary model, they say, is that we do have dinosaurs among us today. they are called birds. They say that these animals eventually transitioned from dwelling on the ground to dwelling in trees, and then took flight at some point, first primitive and then more sophisticated. And if you look at a chicken, golly, take the feathers off it, and it kind of looks like a little dinosaur, too. I mean, minus the beak, and some dinosaurs even had beaks. What do you make of this kind of long way around to keep the dinosaurs among us?
Well, you know, there's a number of things we could say about this. First of all, you know, I don't believe that at all that dinosaurs evolved into birds, and I don't believe dinosaurs had feathers. That's one of the things they try to tell us today, is that dinosaurs had feathers and they were evolving into birds. By the way, dinosaurs are divided. There's a scientific name for them, but we won't use that right now, but just use the layman's name. The dinosaurs are divided into two groups, the bird-hip dinosaurs that supposedly resemble birds in their bone structure, and then the lizard-hip dinosaurs. The funny thing is evolutionists would say it's not the bird-hip dinosaurs that evolved into birds. They say it was the lizard-hip dinosaurs that evolved into birds. So that's an issue in itself. But and they also say, you know, that they claim that over there in China, there's a particular deposit where they found a lot of incredible fossils, and they believe that they found a dinosaur showing evidence it had feathers. Well, other scientists say it was just due to the decay process of the dinosaurs, and they were just looking at the collagen fibers from the decay of the skin and the tissue of the dinosaur. And you know, it's interesting, sometimes, too, they've used terms like this. They say, well, they're not feathers on the dinosaur, but they're proto-feathers. Well, what's a proto-feather? It's what you call something that's not a feather, but you want it to be a feather, and you say it's evolving into a feather, and so it goes on. Because they want to believe dinosaurs evolved into birds, and then they're trying to interpret evidence that they find in that particular way. But, you know, you're going to evolve a dinosaur into a bird, by the way. It requires more than just feathers. You've got to change the whole bone structure, because the bones of a bird are such that, you know, they're very light, and the system by which a bird breathes with all of the air and so on, the way it comes into the bird and the particular way in which it enables it to be more buoyant, to float in air and so on. I mean, there's a lot involved. It's not just a few feathers or something like that. But I think there's one other thing we need to recognize, and let me just state, I do not believe they've ever found a dinosaur or a reptile with feathers on it at all. But remember, there are a lot of mosaics in this world. If you take, like, the platypus from a homeland of Australia, it has a beaver-like tail and a bill like a duck and hair like a bear and web feet like an otter and claws like a reptile and lays eggs like a turtle and feeds its young on milk like a mammal, has spurs like a rooster, poison like a snake. I mean, it has features of reptiles, birds, and mammals, and yet it's just a unique little creature. So, you know, sometimes we do find, you know, these mosaics. In fact, we find a lot of them where you'll find they might have features of reptiles and birds, or birds and mammals and so on. It doesn't mean that evolution's true. It doesn't mean something's evolving into something else. Nobody today would dare say that the platypus was some transitional form or something like that. So just because you find features from one group and another group doesn't mean that that's evidence for evolution anyway. But at the same time, as I said, I don't believe they've ever found any evidence of real feathers on any dinosaur fossils at all.
So when God initially created the world, he created the dinosaurs, and I'm picturing, if you will, that brief time, perhaps, before the fall into sin, where Adam and Eve occupy the Garden of Eden. They keep it, they tend it, and they have dominion over all the creatures and the creation that God had made. Are there dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden?
Well, I'd say yes, there were dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden, because God made two of every kind of land-dwelling, air-breathing animal, and it tells us that he brought certain groups to Adam to name, but he didn't bring all the animals to Adam to name. But I think that it's very possible that dinosaurs were right there in the Garden of Eden, right beside Adam and Eve, even if he didn't name them. I mean, he named the beasts of the field and he named the birds of the air, but whether he actually named dinosaurs, now what Adam called animals back then, of course, we have no idea. I mean, our names today are obviously very, very different, but dinosaurs were made on day six because they were land animals. Those days are ordinary days. The Hebrew word yom, used in context with evening, morning, number, night, as it is in Genesis 1, means they're ordinary days. They're approximately 24 hours each, which means if all the land animals, all air-breathing, land-dwelling animals were made on day six, then Adam and Eve lived at the same time as all the land animals. And so Adam, I believe, would have seen the dinosaurs.
Then with only 1 minute, where did they go? What became of them?
Well, you know, when I'm teaching people, I say, what happened to the dinosaurs? It's very simple. You can sum it up in two words. They died. Lots of animals have died out since the flood. Lots of animals. And so the dinosaurs died too. And as far as we know, there's none living today. But always keep this in mind, that in the Congo or in the Amazon or somewhere, who knows some of the creatures that could be there that we didn't even know existed. And when you think that most dinosaurs are pretty small anyway, the average size being that of a sheep, who knows if it's possible there still is a living dinosaur somewhere in the world. In fact, scientists find almost every year an animal or plant that they didn't know existed on this earth, and they find that it's living. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if one day they did find something like a live dinosaur. But we don't know for sure. There's been reports from the Congo and places like that of creatures that possibly could be, but we don't know for sure.
Folks, you can purchase Ken Ham's new book called Dinosaurs for Kids at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. You'll find the book there. Ken Ham is president, CEO, and founder of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. He hosts the daily radio program Answers with Ken Ham and his new book, Dinosaurs for Kids. Ken, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks to Dick in Phoenix for becoming a patron in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. That's our monthly or annual giving program. Reformation Club members receive premiums like books, transcripts, and an I Have Issues t-shirt. Find out more about the Issues Etc. Reformation Club under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses there, issuesetc.org. Click donate. Please consider joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club today. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., the war against fatherhood. Dr. Stephen Baskerville will be our guest. Yeah, they lived and they died. They were a marvel of God's creation, part of God's creation, not evidence for evolution. And in fact, just because they're not around anymore doesn't mean that we can't still believe that they were there as God's creation, the dinosaurs. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.